Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart-Centered Loving. I'm your host, Jim Brown, and today you are safe. No harm is going to come to you in this space. As always, my goal is to bring more love, more happiness, joy, compassion, peace, and abundance into your life. I ask you to listen to the show today in particular with the goal of taking one thing out of the show and implementing it into your daily life. The reason I say today in particular, you know, today's show is going to be on developing loving relationships. I have 25 things to talk about that destroy relationships and 32 things to talk about that create loving relationships. And I'm not sure we're going to get to the creating loving relationships today or not. But anyway, my point is you're not going to be able to absorb all 57 of these topics. So when you listen with the idea of I want to jot down a couple, pick one out and work on one, because we're human beings and, you know, we don't change instantaneously. I've spoken about change over 100 times, and we're creatures of habit. So you got to cut yourself some slack. And to me, all life is about love. And love is messy. And every single one of us knows love is messy. So we got to learn, how do we deal with the mess of love? You know, I happen to believe in the saying, it's better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all. At any rate, let's go. The opening quote is, you can talk with someone for years, every day, and still, it won't mean as much as what you can have when you sit in front of someone, not saying a word, yet you feel that person with your heart. You feel like you've known the person forever. Connections are made with the heart, not with the tongue. And that's by C. Joy Bell. C. Don't know who that is. So today's opening story, which hopefully will be funny. Several days ago, I left a meeting at a hotel. I desperately gave myself a personal TSA pat-down. I was looking for my keys, and they were not in my pockets. So quickly I searched the meeting room and found nothing. Suddenly I realized I must have left them in the car. Frantically, I headed to the parking lot. My daughter has scolded me many times for leaving the keys in the ignition. You know, my theory is the ignition's the best place not to lose them. However, her theory is that that's the place the car, leave them there and the car will be stolen. As I burst through the door, I came to a terrifying conclusion. Her theory was right. The parking lot was empty. I immediately called the police. I gave my location and confessed I had left my keys in the car and that it had been stolen. Then I made the most difficult call of all. Sweetheart, I stammered. I always call her sweetheart, especially in times like this. I left my keys in the car and it's been stolen. There was a long period of silence. I thought the call had been dropped, but then I heard her voice. Are you kidding me, she barked? I dropped you off. Now it was my time to be silent. Embarrassed, I said, well, please come and get me. She retorted, I will, as soon as I can convince this cop that I didn't steal your car. Yep, it's the golden years. Okay. Big news, at least it's big for me. I've been invited there'll be 20 speakers on a Valentine's Day cruise on the Crown Princess. It's a 7-day Mexican Riviera cruise. It's round trip from Los Angeles. It leaves on Saturday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, and returns the following Saturday, February 21st. It's going to stop in Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, and Puerto Vallarta. We'll be talking more about it as the time gets closer. I'm going to be giving three talks. And the three talks I decided to give are based upon the programs on the radio that you, the most number of you, have listened to. So the first one's going to be what love is and what love isn't. The second one's going to be a combination. Each one of these talks is going to be 90-minute interactive talks. Second one is going to be self-acceptance and self-love. And then the last one, because we've spoken, had four or five programs on forgiveness, and that's going to be on the power of forgiveness to heal. The coordinator of this program is Dr. Susan Shumsky. That's S-H-U-M-S-K-Y. And she's going to be coming on this show in the next couple of months as my guest. We'll talk all about it. And again, you know, to me, life is all about love. And I ask you, what better way is there to expand your ability to love than being on a Spirit of Love cruise for Valentine's Day? Typically, she tells me there are about 250 people that sign up for these cruises, and this one is called the Valentine's Day Spirit of Love. If you want to check it out, you can go to http, you know, /, you know, www, blah, 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 or you can just type in your bar there, lovecruise2015.com. That's LOVECRUISE2015.com. And you'll get all the details about the cruise, about the rooms, about the price. There's a sale going on. Princess is having a sale this week. So for the people on my mailing list, I sent out a notice about the sale. So if you're interested, I would at least suggest you go there, check it out, and see if it makes sense to you. So in the last two shows, we've been talking about self-acceptance and self-love. And in the past, we've talked many times about relationships. And we've talked about love. So now we're going to talk about creating loving relationships. You know, I said it a little bit earlier, you know, love is messy. There's nothing clean about love. You know, anybody who thinks, you know, we all remember, don't we, when we were in love, or the first kiss we got. Mine was Carol Schmidt, and I was 16 years old. Oh, my God, I floated home. And when Rosemary and I were dating, it was like, oh, this is the end of the world. You know, flutter, flutter, flutter. And the thing is 47 years later, I look at her picture, and I still get all tingly inside. So they asked Kirk Douglas, who just celebrated his 60th wedding anniversary, what his key to success was. A successful marriage. And he said, well, I told my wife, if she ever leaves me, I'm coming with. You know, the hard part about the radio show is I can't hear you laughing. So anyway, we all know love is messy, and we know that it's not easy. It requires constant work. And yet, how often do we treat people we work with, people we'll never see again after we stop working with them, better than we treat the closest people to us in our life? We got to get our priorities straight. And this relationship, you start with any relationship you want, that has to be the center of your life. That has to be the focus. That has to be what demands all of your attention. It's constantly changing. The person that I was when we got married August 27th, 1967, I don't even recognize who that was compared to who I am today. So obviously I've changed, she's changed, you've changed, the person that you're thinking about in relationship has changed, and that's constantly happening, and that's life. We can't get in our car and drive our car and leave go of the wheel and expect the car to go where we want it to go. We have to take control of the wheel, and it's the same thing with our loving relationships. So I'm going to ask you again, focus on one or two items. And, you know, like I said, we're going to go through 57 items. That's going to be between today and probably next week. Because as I think about this and I've gone through this, and what I do is I start the show, I create it, and it just keeps expanding. It's kind of like putting dough in the oven. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's gotten so big with the first part that I'm thinking that it'd be too much for me to cover both parts of it at one time. So the first part that I'm going to cover is going to be the things that destroy relationships. So the way I look at this is we got to do our spring cleaning. We got to clean out the closets. We got to clean out the clutter. We got to get rid of all the poison, you know, wash it, paint it, and get it ready for the start of a new way to look at it. So the first thing I have is we have expectations of the other person. And when they don't meet our expectations, often we withhold our love or we allow our ego to dictate how we react to our unfulfilled expectations. Now, this is a big one for me, and that's why it's number one on my list. Just mentioned we've been married 47 years. It'll be 47 years in 2 weeks. And I still expect Rosemary to think like I do. I mean, go figure. I'm a man. I'm slow. And I know nobody else sees life the way I do. Yet I react. And every night she comes home from work and I think, I want to respond. I want to love. I want to do this. I want to do that. And bing, she says something or does something. And it's just like somebody yanks me. It's like being in, a bungee cord. And you get to the bottom and boom, it yanks you right back up. So my challenge is to respond the way I want to respond. And at the same time, when I react, not to beat myself up. That doesn't work either, does it? We beat ourselves up so nobody else can beat themselves up worse than we can. And we know our ego gets in the way, doesn't it? And the ego, to me, is that part of myself whose responsibility it is to keep my life in a constant state of chaos. So the first thing we have to do is to recognize, uh-oh, this is my ego talking. This isn't who I want to be in charge of this relationship. I want that aspect of myself, my heart, my soul, my love. That's what I want to be controlling this interaction. I don't have to be right. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. All that matters is the love. Now, Dorothy is on the line, and she called me ahead of time to ask about the program, and we're talking about how these things destroy relationships, and she says, you know, she's lost two husbands. She said death destroys a relationship, and she was kidding. But the bottom line is, talk to somebody who's lost their husband or their wife and really ask them what they wish they would have done differently if they had him or her back. And to a person, they're going to tell you, I want to hug them one more time. I want to tell him or her how much I love them one more time. And the stuff that mattered, that I nagged about when he or she was alive, really isn't important at all. That's what we have to get. This relationship is going to end. So cherish the time you have together every single day. Feel the love. Immerse yourself in the love like you would go into a jacuzzi. You sit in there and you allow that just to surround you and relax you and let you know how blessed you are to have this relationship. And in order for this relationship to work, you have to work at it with your partner. So expectations, what's the challenge here? Let go. We got to love each other just the way they are. I got to love Rosemary the way she is. And I know I'm not the only one with this problem. So our goal is to respond, not to react. Pardon me. So the quote I have here, one more thing. Expectations are the alligator that keeps biting us in the ass. So we got to let go of these expectations. And the quote I have for this is, to expect nothing and to appreciate everything. If I expect nothing, I can never be disappointed, can I? Number two, we judge the person we love. And needless to say, none of us like to be judged. And we know when we're being judged, we don't like it. Nobody sees life the way you do. Therefore, give up the burden of judging. Remember, in the last two shows ago, we talked about self-acceptance, and not many of you downloaded that show, but that's the June 10th show. A logical extension of self-acceptance is to accept other people's just the way they are. when we can do that, then there's no longer any need to judge, is there? Oh, well, that's the way she is. And one of the things I'll talk about, I think it's the last one, is we all have our own idiosyncrasies, don't we? And we all know we have our idiosyncrasies, and our idiosyncrasies are fine, but not your idiosyncrasies. Uh-huh. I don't know how many of you watched Everybody Loves Raymond, but Robert, in that show, touches all of his food to the base of his chin before he puts it in his mouth. Idiosyncrasy drives me nuts, but that's okay. Now, what our goal here is when we're talking about judging is to move from the place of judging to the place of observing. And like anything else, it's a journey. I mean, we have all this great technology, and 4 weeks after we get off of this cruise, we're taking a cruise from Fort Lauderdale to Venice. And then we'll fly back. We'll go to Milan after Venice. We'll fly home from Milan. You know, we have fax machines. Why can't I just fax myself home? You know, but life is messy. We gotta let go of judging. So what our goal is in that process, is to go from judging to observing. And that's a destination, just a journey, just like going from Milan to Los Angeles is a journey. So we're not going to be able to say, okay, I'm at the destination of observing, and I observe 100% of the time. You're going to go back to judging. So life is a process. Don't beat yourself up when you judge, but really compliment yourself and say, wow, look at that. I observed him. I observed her today. That's awesome. Just try it for 1 hour at a time or 1 day at a time and see how you can do as you build into it. Remember, we fall back into our old patterns. So the quote for judging is, a child is like a butterfly. Some can fly higher than others, but each one flies the best it can. Why compare one to the other? Each one is different, each one is special, and each one is beautiful. Number three, we criticize the person we love. And even though we don't like to be criticized, most of us criticize ourselves. So the challenge here, again, this is, you say, well, gee, this isn't a whole lot different than judging. You're absolutely right. But what we're talking about here is basically what, you know, how you look at things. You may say, this is judging, this is criticizing, I don't care. You know, we judge someone, and sometimes we say something, sometimes we don't say something. We criticize somebody, usually that we're saying something. And being critical creates a negative energy. And for those of you who don't believe it, the exercise I've used on audiences is that I'll take and ask you and somebody else to go out of the room. Then I'll say to the audience, when they come back in the room, I'm going to ask you to think about the person you love most in the world. And then I'm going to snap my finger. And when I snap my finger, you're going to think about somebody that really makes you angry. So now I bring the two back into the room, and they don't know what's going on. So I'll have one hold his or her arm out, and then the other one try and pull it down. So I've told the audience to think about the person that they love the most, and the person who's trying to pull this person's arm down can't do it. I'll snap my finger, and then I'll say, try it again, and immediately the arm goes down. What am I saying? This is kinesiology. What I'm saying is that negativity weakens us. We've all been walked into rooms where there was anger in the room, and we could feel it. Yesterday I was listening to a radio show, and this isn't, you know, this is, I just want to say how I reacted. They had a quote, or they had Joan Rivers talking about the Palestinians and how the children should be dead. They deserved it, and she went on and on. And the point is that my stomach knotted up and just, you know, it retched. It was so toxic to me. And don't we do that to each other and somebody that we love? How we, when our ego gets offended, we react like little kids having a temper tantrum, and we yell and scream, or we take it out on somebody else, or whatever it is that we do. So the quote here for criticizing is to become an encourager. The world has plenty of critics already. We know that. I mean, there could be two people left in the world and they would see things differently. And that's the big thing. We know that. Everybody's going to see things differently. There isn't another human being ever created that's going to see life the way you see it. Number four, very often we don't say what we mean. That is, we don't communicate effectively. And I think effective communication is a key element to the success of every relationship in our life. And to me, communication is the responsibility of the communicator, okay? So I'm doing the talking. It's my responsibility that you understand what it is that I'm saying. And how do I do that? We went to a marriage seminar at University of Santa Monica. We were married 35 years at the time. And they gave us a little heart. And the deal with a heart, you can use anything, is I'm talking, okay? So when I'm talking, that means you can't talk. I got the heart. But what happens is that when I get finished talking, I got to give the heart to you, and you got to tell me what you thought I said. Well, what does that mean? I can't talk too long, because if I get into a long, drawn-out diatribe, you're not going to hear me. Emmy, who's a friend of mine who does check her site out, Ask the Angels, and she said she had a boyfriend one time, and he talked and talked and talked, and he got upset because she didn't listen. She said, "I can't listen that long." We watch television, don't we? We got 7 minutes between the show before it goes to the commercial. Apparently, that's our attention span. So communication is your responsibility. What do you think? What did you hear me say? How often we say something, I don't know about how you work, but I suspect it's the same as the way I do. And that is, you have a thought, and your thoughts go a whole lot faster than your words. So what you do is you send the thought from your brain to your mouth, and now you're thinking something else, and you're not necessarily even listening to the words that are coming out of your mouth. And how many times have you go, "Oh my God, that wasn't what I wanted to say"? So we've got that just from the short distance from our head to our mouth where it gets messed up. So one of the things I'm going to talk about in a few minutes is, you know, the important thing is that we're happy, not that we're right. We got to get that. The goal of a loving relationship is to be happy, not to keep score. This isn't a baseball game or a football game or any kind of athletic competition where we have to keep score. Here, all we're going to do is love. And in order to love, we got to get rid of all the shit. Excuse the word. We got to clean that out. And we all have closets full of that stuff. So, what I want to say here is that as the one who's speaking, your job is to speak in a way that you cannot be misunderstood. We've all heard everything we've said our whole life, haven't we? And how many times we've said it? Rosemary has seen me speak on cruise ships probably 200 times. She's heard the stories over and over again. And how many times do we go out with somebody new and we got to listen to our husband, our wife, our girlfriend, our boyfriend, whoever's story for the umpteenth million time? But we got to communicate not to be misunderstood. The quote I have here, incidentally, the way I did this is each one of these, I then Googled quotes about communication, quotes about criticism, quotes about judging, etc. So if you're looking for something, if you have a problem, go in and look that up and look at the ones that are... I see somebody up here. Look at the ones that are... I'm distracted, okay? There's somebody that's waiting to talk. So let me get through one or two more of these to you, Mr. or Miss, in the 646 area code. Communication. Without communication, there is no relationship. Without respect, there is no love. Without trust, there is no reason to continue. Number five, we got 20 more to go in 35 minutes. We get angry. There are a lot of reasons that we get angry, like you didn't say or do what you promised to say or do, or you didn't do what I expected from you. And also, I believe and have seen this, that anger is a secondary emotion and it covers up fear. Again, we have our expectations rearing its ugly head, right, as a poisonous element in these relationships. We need to learn to express our feelings. Remember, we all have feelings, and feelings are things that get, that when they run away from us, then we express them in ugly ways, and then nobody can hear. You can't hear when somebody is trying to shout at you or someone's trying to make you wrong. So we need to learn how to express these feelings in a calm and quiet way so that the person we're talking to can hear us. They're not going to hear us when you're yelling at us. We're not going to hurt. They're not going to be listening. So the quote I have here is that the more anger toward the past you carry in your heart, the less capable you are of loving in the present. And Buddha said, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And how many of you have seen that happen with somebody who gets divorced? And they've been hurt. So they figure the only way to heal the hurt is to inflict 10 times as much pain on their partner as their partner inflicted on them. And we know that's never going to work. That's like this thing here. You're drinking poison expecting the other person to die. Let's not do it. Let's let go of this anger. Let's know that when it comes down to it, if we're sitting here today and today is the last day of our life, what do we want? We want to be able to say, hey, I loved and I enjoyed it. And yeah, it had bumps and curves in the road, but I don't have any regrets that I gave of myself, I gave of my heart, I loved from the depths of my heart, and it was a wonderful experience. Number 6, we hold grudges. Of course, we all know that holding a grudge is not an element that leads to the continuation of a loving relationship. So once again, we got to let go, don't we? Grudges are worthless. What do they do? I mean, it's, again, you're setting yourself up as judge, jury, and executioner. And a quote for this one is, holding a grudge is letting someone live rent-free in your head. Well, why do that? You know, you're holding on, and you're saying, well, you did wrong. You did, you know, and I'm going to hold this against you forever. Oh, come on. We're all human beings. We've all made thousands and thousands of mistakes in our lifetime. Who the heck wants to hold on to this and say, well, I'm going to be angry the rest of my life because you did this to me or you said that to me? If we want to do that, then we're going to live, it's going to be like living in quicksand. And we're going to live in hatred, we're going to live in anger, we're going to live in fear. Or you let it go and you say, hey, I want to live in love. Love is messy. I'll say it again and again and again and again. Love is messy. So accept it and let it go. How about the maturity of the point of view of getting even? Really? You know, how many of us have done that? You know, you did this to me, I'm going to do that to you. I love Dr. Phil's quote, and that applies here. How's that working for you? Next one, which is number 8, is theoretically most all of us would rather be happy than right. I have known some engineers who say no, they'd rather be right than happy. However, how often do, you know, I believe in that. I want to be happy. But yet I get sucked into combat with Rosemary in order to be right. She'll say this, and I go, rah, 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 rah. And again, what happens, I don't know what happens to you, but what happens to me is like my ego jumps inside my body, and it's like a straitjacket, and it's got me totally strapped in. And used to be I could be mad at her for a week. And now when I'm getting upset, I'm going, I don't want this. I don't want this. Do I still get upset? Yeah. But I want to be able to move toward it. You got to understand something. I cannot talk about anything that I'm not in the process of trying to correct or work through in my life. I can't sit here and talk to you about these things and not have them work, you know, be something that I'm trying to work on. So, we've discussed this before, that there's only two outcomes in every interaction. It's either win-win or lose-lose. So if I'm trying to prove to you that I'm right, that creates a lose-lose situation. And to you who is in 646, I'm going to do two more and then I'll get to you, okay? How often, number nine, how often do we allow our ego to run around like a spoiled two-year-old brat? Oh, my. That ego, huh? We all know that when we lose control of our higher self, of our heart, and of our soul to our ego, it always leads to a disaster. So the key here is we got to learn when our ego is the one that's talking and just saying, shut up, close the door, go. Like when you meditate, if you go in there and your ego is going to talk to you, say, hey, you sit outside the door here. I'm going to go in here for a few minutes. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to relax. I'm going to go, you know, have dinner with my partner, blah, blah, blah. You stay here. I'll come and get you later. So the idea here is the ego is the only, this is a quote, the ego is the only requirement to destroy any relationship. So be a bigger person and skip the E in ego and let it go. You drop the E out of ego and it's go. So let go of the ego. Skip the E, let it go, and come back and know that all you're trying to do is to focus on having a successful, loving relationship. But you got to get all the debris out. It's like we just had a hurricane, and we got to clean all this stuff out before we can rebuild. Number 10, very often when we create a mess, we don't apologize and we don't clean up the mess. Well, again, that's the ego. I screwed up, you know, I got to clean it up. And I learned this from Linnell in Salt Lake City. She's in Oregon now. You got to clean up your mess. And this requires humility and also a conscious awareness that the sanctity of this relationship is all that matters. You know, I don't have to tell you what it creates if we don't, you know, if we don't clean up our messes. The quote here is from Dr. Seuss. If you can see things out of whack, then you can see how things can be in whack. Okay, let me go to this lady. Or man, she or he is coming on. Okay, whoever this is in 646, hi. Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Who is this?
This is Sandra. How are you?
Good.
Yeah,
what
I
can
was
I do for you?
And you was getting to some valid point. That's why I took myself off so I could hear the rest of it.
Oh, you want me to hang you up?
No, I will come back with a question, but this is really good.
Oh, good. Yeah, this is really deep stuff, right? You know, like,
yes.
We all know this.
Yeah.
You know,
I do have a question, though, but I was
okay.
Going to wait until you get through all of them, and then I'll come back.
Okie doke.
All right.
I'll put you back on hold.
Thank you, darling.
Oh, she said, thank you, darling. Woo! Okay. Number 11. I'll just read what I wrote. Oh, what a relationship destroyer stubbornness is. Now, I don't know how many of you know stubborn people, but Rosemary is Italian, and she was raised to be stubborn. Now, you know, very often I'll ask for volunteer in an audience, and I'll ask them to put their hand out, and I'll push against their hand, and I'll bet in the neighborhood of 9 times out of 10, the person will push back. I never say anything other than hold your hand out. And how often do we get stubborn and you say, okay, you're going to do this, I'm going to push back as just as much force. And it doesn't work. And we know the antidote to stubbornness, don't we? It's compromise and flexibility. Okay? None of us never, ever, ever get what we want. That's not how life works. The only way that would work is if you were the only human being alive. Then you get what you want, I guess. But as long as there's others of us, we don't see life the same, and we got to come together, and we got to say, okay, we got to come to some sort of compromise. It was interesting. And I'm sure he's not listening, but this morning I went to a meeting. The man and woman who live below us have two dogs, and the one dog barks. Apparently they let the dogs out as early as 4:15 in the morning. Of course, they said they didn't leave them out before 5. Well, that still wakes me up because we sleep at this time of the year in Los Angeles with our windows open at night. And all he could see was that I was trying to do something to his dogs. He says, dogs bark. The dogs have to go out. And the dogs bark to let back in. And when the facilitator said, well, could you leave the door open? His wife said, well, he doesn't like to leave the door open. So the point is I thought it was very fascinating to see how he saw his point, and only his point, and that it was irrelevant that I got woken up at 4:30, quarter, 5, 5 o'clock in the morning. His dogs have to go out, and his dogs are his babies. And how many times have we been in a situation where all we could do is see our point of view, our way? Okay? And that destroys relationships, doesn't it? So we got to learn not to be stubborn. We've got to compromise. Compromise is basically, that's what life is about. And particularly in a loving relationship, compromise has to be what it's about. And another word for compromise to me is flexibility. We got to be flexible. And I wonder if the reason that our bodies get rigid when we get older is because we are rigid rather than being flexible. And our body reflects our lack of flexibility. I can't prove it. I just throw that out. So here's the quote for this one. Tell the negative committee that meets inside your head to sit down and shut up. Okay? We all have this negative committee, and they have this meeting inside of our head. Just tell them, sit down and shut up. You have the right to lead your life the way you want. And there's only one reason that you're listening to this show today. You want to learn how to be more loving in your relationships. So in order to be more loving in your relationships, you got to get rid of all the stuff that destroys them. I see that Dorothy is on the line here, so we better let Dorothy on. Now, before we talk about Dorothy, no, we'll talk about Dorothy right now. Dorothy, I've talked about before. She's the lady at the gym who says her body talks to her, and she tells her body to shut up. So here comes Dorothy. Come on. Incidentally, they told me that the whole system went down this morning. Is this the Dorothy from the gym?
Yes, 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 yes.
Hello.
It is. It is, and I went to the gym and you weren't there. But, you know, I love your humor, and I love the warm way that you are expressing yourself. And I want to ask you a question.
Thank you.
If you put your notes aside, what would be, like, 2 for you of the most important things to do in a relationship? I know you've got 25 things there. 2. Like, just what?
No, these are the not-to-dos.
What would be the do? Okay. What would be 2 of the do's?
Well, it would be with Rosemary. It would just be to know the importance of loving her, and that, as you know, when she was in the hospital in December, it practically destroyed me because it brought out my biggest fear, and that would be to lose her, to be living without her. And you know, because you've lost 2 husbands. And that would
be right.
My number one thing is to know that this marriage is going to end in one of us being left alone. And to focus, constantly focus every day on saying, hey, I got to enjoy today.
Well, that's lovely.
And the second thing is to treat her the way she deserves to be treated, to compliment her more, to love her more, to praise her. She's an amazing, amazing woman. And there's only one person in the world I want to be with. That's her. I could spend the rest of my life with nobody else but her. And it's that negative committee and that ego and stuff that stops me from, that interrupts it, I should say. But I look at it like, you know, hey, life is an ongoing process of learning and growing.
You know, that's lovely. If you're saying that you cherish every day and every moment with her because you never know about, well, you do know about tomorrow. One of you will be gone.
Right.
But you cherish every day, every day, every day, and just say, oh, wow, isn't it great? Isn't she great?
I don't. I try to. I try to. Okay? I can't say I do that. You know, and that's one of the reasons to do programs like this. That's one of the reasons that I'm going to be on that cruise ship, because this is the kind of thing I want to talk about, creating loving relationships, forgiving. And we're all it. And the more I talk about it, because my integrity is who I am and what I'm about, I can't talk about something that I'm not doing my best to live. Some people get up there and spout the words out, and it means nothing because they get off the stage and they do something totally different.
So your 25 points are ways to get rid of the negativity so that you can have a really loving, positive relationship. So, but you sort of have to know what those 24 or 25 hazards are so you can...
Well, they may not be for everybody. They may not...
I see.
There only may be two or three for any person, but some of them, like I say, judgment and criticism, some people may not see any difference between the two. And in the beginning of the show, I said, hey, pick one or two, because if you say 25, it's like saying, I'm going to lose 100 pounds. It'll be overwhelming. Try and lose 10 pounds. Do one thing. You know,
so you're saying to listen to the 25 and see which ones are relevant to you, the ones that you connect to and the ones that you don't. You don't, but the ones that hit home are the ones to think about.
Well, or just take one. I mean, do it one at a time. That's that's the whole point. We can't try and do all of them at one time.
How can we get this list from you? Because I'm not writing. How can I get this list?
Well, you can send me an email at jim@jimbrownspeaker.com, and I'd be happy to send it to you. Or with you, I can bring it in the morning.
Well, I don't only mean me, because I think there are other people who are listening, and if they're not taking notes, it's like every one of these things you're saying is really, really important, only how do you, I can't remember them all, but they're very helpful.
Well, that's why I said, take notes and just jot down one or two, and there's two ways to look at it. One way to look at it is, I want to do the thing that's hardest for me to do first, or I want to do the thing that's easiest first.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I would do the thing that's easiest first, because that says, oh, boy, I overcame that one. So I can let's go on to the next one. If I try to do the hardest thing first and I don't succeed, I'm apt to quit. So it's building upon your success. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. Take the easy thing and get it out of the way and then move up to the more difficult ones.
And we got our whole life and the whole relationship to do it. Okay.
However long that is.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing. You don't know. I mean, every one of us knows people. Teenagers know somebody younger than them that have died. So we don't know. We do know that the odds of us going together are slim.
But even if your significant other or important person doesn't die, sometimes we break up, and that's, you know, difficult. And then it's helpful to have these hints as to what one could do in the next relationship so that it could be more solid than the last one.
Oh, well, that one is relatively easy. I was going to do a whole show on that. We were going to do it. First thing to do would be set boundaries. And it's easiest to set boundaries when you begin a relationship, when you begin to walk into the relationship, because there isn't the emotional... what do you call it? The emotional baggage of a relationship, because a relationship tends to pick up baggage as time goes on. And well, I have never done this in this many years, so I'm not going to do it now. But to set the boundaries and setting boundaries and enforcing them is one of the hardest things we ever do. And we all who have had children know that they attempt from the moment they come, the day they're born, to set the boundaries. Say, well, let's see if I cry. Let's see what happens here. Anyway, can I move on?
Of course, my dear. But thank you very much. This is very, very nice. Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, now the lady who was on 646 says she's got a question now. So we'll bring her back. Do you have your
Hello?
Question now?
Yes.
Yes,
I do. How are you?
Okay, ready, set, go.
All right, the question is, when you're with someone, and actually is a two-part question.
Okay. Don't go too fast on me.
I'm not going to go too fast. A man always knows that he's going to marry a woman once he sees her. And my grandmother and my aunt always said that. You know, when they see a woman, they say, all right, that's my wife. But if you're in a relationship, well, that's what I've always been told. If you're in a relationship for longer than 3 years, that means he's never going to marry you.
Oh, I don't have a clue. I got married 11 months after I met Rosemary.
Yeah, so they always said that's a bad thing, to be with somebody for a very long time because you would never, ever get married. It is past,
you know, an interesting statistic
years.
I heard about that is that people who live together and then get married have a higher divorce rate than people who get married and then live together, which is just the opposite of what I would have thought it would have been.
Right.
So is that the second part of the question or the first part of the question?
Oh, that was the first part. The second part is if you have somebody that they, like you said, they're stubborn, and you're trying to be the adult about it when you have discussions about their attitude or how they approach certain situations, and they always get very uptight. What is actually the best approach to deal with that? Because
well, to me, it was...
Like you said, you're human, and it gets to a point where you really want to lamp out, and you're trying not to do that.
So, we got someone in the background there.
Yeah, I know. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Is it okay if I take you offline and answer the question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so her question is, what do you do when somebody is stubborn and they don't want to be flexible? And the way I would approach it would be to say, when that person is in a loving and caring mood, ask them what's the best time and the best way to sit down and have a loving discussion between us. And I'm not accusing you of anything. And it may be that he says or she's, well, in her case, it would be he. He says, well, we need to, how about if we go to a restaurant? Okay. And the key thing here when we're talking is to say, to talk about my feelings. Okay. What happens is people have to be right. That's why we're stubborn. I have to be right. And we got to learn and say, well, what's most important here in this relationship? Do we want this relationship, or is this a relationship of rigidity where I have to have it my way? And you're looking to move toward flexibility. And you say, well, what would you like from me that would allow me or make me, make this relationship better? And then see how he or she responds to that. Hopefully that answers the question. Guess what? I'm looking here at about 12 more minutes, and we aren't even halfway through the first part of the list. So we're going to continue this next week. Resentment. We talked about resentment, didn't we? Resentment is right on the top of the list we can do to destroy a relationship. Some people here become passive-aggressive. And now we're going across the ocean. And Helga, I'm talking to you now. Because Helga knows who she is, and her husband has got Alzheimer's right now, and she's having to deal with the resentment of things that happened in the past. And the bottom line is the past is over, okay? And what Helga has got the opportunity to do now is to build the memory. She has an altar in her heart. And what she wants to do in this time with Alan is to build the memories that she wants to cherish for the rest of her life. The challenge that she has to take care of somebody that has Alzheimer's, and I'm sure, you know, many of you in this, who are listening, have had somebody in your family that has had it. Not a fun thing to do. Both of our moms had it, but having your husband or wife have it is just beyond my comprehension. There was a story of a man that went to get a bandage changed, a wound dressed, and it was 7:30 in the morning, and he said to the nurse he needed to be at the nursing home at 9 o'clock to have breakfast with his wife, and she said, well, what is she in there for? And he said, she's in here for dementia. And the nurse said, does she know who you are? And he says, no. He says, the nurse said, well, how long hasn't she known? He said, 5 years. And she said, well, why do you have to be there for breakfast for her at 9 o'clock? He said, she may not know who I am, but I know who she is. And that's what love is about. Okay? What did I say in the beginning? It's about expecting nothing and accepting. It's about giving. And if there's a certain point where you can't give anymore, and you reach that point, then you got to sit down and say, hey, there's only so much I can give. I need to be able to have a reciprocal relationship. This is what I want and need from you, Mr. Stubborn. And say, what of this can you give me? You have to be direct. This is what I would call intimacy in a relationship. And we have to get into the relationship, and we have to ask these questions and have these conversations. Number 13, when we don't forgive the person we love, this is the lethal dose that's going to destroy the relationship. We've done many programs on forgiveness, and obviously you remember that I defined forgiveness as the emotional attachment to the event. So what I do, I have a guided meditation on forgiveness. I think it's February 15th. If you go to all of my programs are on iTunes as podcasts. You go back there, you can do that. And to me, we have to send love from our heart to their heart. Doesn't matter what's going on, okay? You don't have to see the person or be with the person or talk to the person. You have to release yourself from the emotional attachment and go through that meditation. It's all about our heart, isn't it? Our heart gets broken, but we got to mend our heart ourselves. And the only way we can mend it is to forgive. We got to forgive ourselves. Sometimes it's harder to forgive yourself than others. It's up to each person. So we got to send that love from our heart to their heart, until there's no emotional attachment. So the quote we have here is forgiveness. Anyone can hold a grudge, but it takes a person with character to forgive. When you forgive, you release yourself from a painful burden. Forgiveness doesn't mean what happened was okay, and it doesn't mean that the person should still be welcome in your life. What it does mean is that you have made peace with the pain, and you're ready to let go. Okay, we said, and I said I'm going to say this over and over again, that we're talking about love is messy. Okay, if you hold on to all this stuff, remember the movie Parent Trap and how they didn't like Dad's new girlfriend, he was going to get married, and the two girls are going along, and they kept putting a rock in their backpack? This is just what life is about. Every time something happens and you hold on to it, it's another rock in your backpack. And at one point in time, your backpack is going to be so heavy, you're not going to be able to carry it anymore. So you got to let it go. I'm trying to think where I am here. Let me try and get one or two more in, and then we'll continue this next week. Number 14 is we get complacent. Complacency breeds stagnation, and we know that stagnant water is a breeding ground for bugs of all sorts. It's the same with our life. We get complacent. Don't get complacent. Just because I've been married 47 years, keep it fresh. Bring flowers. Bring candy. Do something nice. Show and say what you mean. Okay, don't hold it inside. What if today is the last day you're ever going to be with this person? What would your regret be that you didn't say, that you didn't do? Don't go through that guilt and pain of having to go through that. Sit there. Tell her how much you love her. Tell her how important. Tell him how important he is in her life. Thank him for doing this, for doing that. For whether it's Rosemary will thank me for bringing down the laundry, and I'll thank her for doing the laundry. You know, she's fallen down the stairs twice, so I've told her you can't carry anything down the stairs. It terrifies me. So we got to let go of that complacency. Complacency, again, it's not going to help us. It's kind of like driving your car 50 miles an hour, taking your hand off the steering wheel for 2 or 3 minutes. You know you're going to crash. So in order for any relationship or every relationship to grow and stay healthy, it requires constant attention. And the last one I'm going to cover today is that we get bored. There's not a whole lot of difference here between being bored and complacent, is there? You know, and when we're bored, we tend to take each other for granted. And again, we have to keep things alive. Why not date each other? I don't care how long you've been married. Date each other. And this week, I get to pick what we do on a date. Next week, you get to pick what we do on a date. We go out for this, we go out for that. So it's easy. Do things differently. Boredom, the quote here is, boredom is not a pattern. It's a pattern, it's not a reality. Well, I got a couple quick ones here. 16, we find fault with each other. I don't need to expand on that, do I? Instead of finding fault, find out what you love about the person. Instead of looking, see, when we fall in love, that's a chemical type of thing, and we just, oh my God, she's so beautiful, she did see that, you know. And then when we get married, we switch from these rose-colored sunglasses. Go out and buy yourself a pair of rose-colored sunglasses so you see life through rose-colored sunglasses. Get rid of those damn black sunglasses because that sees the fault. And if you're looking for fault, you're going to find fault. You look for fault in yourself, you're going to find fault in yourself. You look for fault in me, you're going to find fault in me. We're all imperfect human beings, so we got to stop looking for fault in each other and ourselves. Start looking for what you love about each other. Now, one of mine is nagging. I hate nagging. You tell me to do something, I'll do it. Don't tell me 10 minutes later, 5 minutes later, did you do this? I don't like being nagged. And the quote I have here is, it's hard to kiss the lips at night that chew your ass out all day. The last one I'm going to cover is we get demanding. Love, true love, is that which can give the most without asking or demanding anything in return. So, you know, if we get down to the bottom line here, that's the bottom line. True love gives the most without demanding or asking for anything in return. Why are our wedding rings a circle? It's a process of giving and receiving. So, with that, I'm going to go skip down to the bottom and give our closing quote and our closing story and remind you one more time of the cruise. So, the closing quote is, when you truly love somebody, you give everything you can, and you never expect a return. What? I'm reading this. Google quotes about love with graphics. There are tons of great quotes. Send them to your lover. Okay. So, look it up. Google quotes about love. And why don't you email them to your lover? Email them one every day. This isn't a quote, but this actually happened. I met a man in church at a church dinner over 40 years ago. He introduced me to his wife like this. This is my wife, Mary, of 55 years. She is like a fine wine. She keeps getting better with age. Now, what better testimony to a loving relationship than after 55 years saying your wife is like a fine wine, she gets better with age. So here we go with the closing story. It's a brand new pastor and his wife were newly assigned to their first ministry to reopen a church in suburban Brooklyn. They got there in early October, and they were really excited about their opportunities. When they saw their church, it was very run down and needed a lot of work. They set a goal of having everything done in time to have their first service on Christmas Eve. They worked hard, they repaired the pews, they plastered the walls, they did the painting, and on December 18th, they were actually ahead of schedule and just about done. On December 19th, a terrible rainstorm, hit the area and lasted for 2 days. On the 21st, the pastor went over to the church. His heart sank when he saw that the roof had leaked, causing a huge area of plaster about 20 feet by 8 feet to fall off of the front wall of the sanctuary right behind the pulpit, just about head high. He cleaned up the mess on the floor and didn't know what else to do but postpone the Christmas Eve service, and he went home. On the way, he noticed there's a little local business was having a flea market sale for charity, so he stopped in. One of the items was a beautiful handmade ivory-colored crocheted tablecloth with exquisite work, fine colors, and a cross embroidered right in the center. It was just the right size to cover up the hole in the front of the wall. He bought it and headed back to church. By this time, it had started to snow. An older woman running from the opposite direction was trying to catch the bus. She missed it. The pastor invited her to wait in a warm church for the next 45 minutes. She sat in a pew and paid no attention to the pastor while he got a ladder, hangers, etc., to put up the tablecloth as a wall tapestry. The pastor could hardly believe how beautiful it looked, and it covered up the entire problem area. Then he looked and noticed a woman was walking down the center aisle. Her face was white as a sheet. She said, "Pastor, where did you get that tablecloth?" He explained. The woman asked him to check the lower right-hand corner to see if the initials E, B, G were crocheted in there. They were. These were the initials of the woman, and she made this tablecloth 35 years before in Austria. Remember, they're in Brooklyn. The woman could hardly believe it as the pastor told her how he had just gotten the tablecloth. The woman explained that before the war, she and her husband were well-to-do people in Austria. When the Nazis came, she was forced to leave. Her husband was going to follow her the next week. He was captured, sent to prison, and she never saw her husband or her home again. The pastor wanted to give her the tablecloth, but she made the pastor keep it for the church. The pastor insisted on driving her home. That was the least he could do. She lived on the other side of Staten Island and was only in Brooklyn for that day for a housekeeping job. They had a wonderful service on Christmas Eve. Church was almost full. The music and spirit was great. At the end, the pastor and his wife greeted everyone at the door, and many of them said they would return. One older man, whom the pastor recognized from the neighborhood, continued to sit in one of the pews and stare. The pastor wondered why he wasn't leaving. The man asked him where he got the tablecloth on the front wall, because it was identical to the one his wife made many years ago when they lived in Austria before the war, and how could there be two tablecloths so much alike? He told the pastor how the Nazis came, how he forced his wife to flee for her safety, and he was supposed to follow, but he was arrested and put in prison. He never saw his wife or his home again in all the 35 years since. The pastor asked him if he would allow him to take him for a little ride. They drove to Staten Island and the same house where the pastor had taken the woman 3 days earlier. He helped the man climb the 3 flights of stairs to the woman's apartment. He knocked on the door, and he saw the greatest Christmas reunion he could ever imagine. So we never know how love changes, do we? Quickly here, I'm going to invite you to go to lovecruise2015.com for the details of the Spirit of Love Cruise and to sign up, or send me an email at jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. We will continue part two of this program next Tuesday. And as always, I close by saying, I send love from my heart to yours. I ask you to receive this love and to share it. We all know there's an infinite supply of love. Thank you. I love you. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.